Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by Forever Photos by Andre Ballo at andresphotos.com. That's E-N-D-R-E-S, photos.com. Tonight's guest is Dr. Eben Alexander III, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number is 888-627-6008, or you can instant message the studio at Signs of Life Radio on AIM. And good evening to you, Bob.
Hello, Fran, and as you mentioned, our guest tonight, Dr. Alexander, I'm really intrigued and excited. We've had a lot of guests, fascinating guests on in the 5 years we've been doing the show. But this particular guest will be talking from many different perspectives. You know, as you're going to find out, he's a very accomplished medical doctor, a neurosurgeon, and he had his own extraordinary near-death experience. He'll be able to talk from both ends, and we'll see how that changed his life. A lot of stuff on the media this week. We're approaching the anniversary of 9/11. You heard a report on the radio today you were telling me about.
Yeah, there's apparently one, and I don't pay any attention. I usually just turn on the car radio when I'm going someplace to get some sort of traffic report and what roads to avoid. But there was one station that was kind of hyping up their coverage of the 10th anniversary of 9/11, and they had one of their journalists who had been covering it, or covering a story 10 years ago and happened to be downtown Manhattan, and noticed all of these people running in the same direction. But there was one woman running in the opposite direction, and she chose this woman to ask her where she was going, since everybody was running away from downtown. Right. And she said, "I'm late for work. I have to get to work."
Right. So, I mean, she was totally oblivious to the fact of what was going on. She was focused on getting to work.
On getting to work. And I think a lot of people were that way that morning. Very few people down on the street knew what was going on. I mean, imagine that. You're getting up in the morning and you're doing your routine. You don't necessarily have the radio on. You're walking down the streets of Manhattan. You're picking up your coffee, your donut, whatever it is, and you're on your way to work, or your bus was late or whatever it was. You were not listening to the radio.
Right.
And I have to say, and many of the stations didn't know what was happening when it was happening anyhow. They didn't get the coverage until later.
And, of course, the fact that she was late for work turned out to save her life, as it did for many, many other people who you learn about these stories.
So many of those stories where was not their routine for the day, that routine changed on that day, keeping them from walking into those Twin Towers on September 11th, 2001.
Yeah, and many reports of people having precognitive experiences. You know, they had feelings that something was going to happen and change their plans accordingly, you know, which raises another interesting question. I mean, I think that that seems to be happening more and more. I don't know, maybe it's just my imagination, but
no,
I hear more and more people having these kinds of experiences and catching these glimpses of the future. So the question is, are people taking them seriously, or is it just people just still don't quite believe what they're getting?
Well, if you're going to ask me, I'm going to tell you that the reason you're seeing a lot more of this stuff more frequently, you're hearing about it more frequently, is because we're moving closer to the end of that Mayan calendar that has to do with the shift in the universe and how the universe is set up. So that energy is changing the way the unseen energies around us exist. And so some of us are becoming more open to tapping into that oneness, to that, if you want to call it Akashic Records or whatever you want to call it, but we are all one, and I think that this is this movement, this shift that's coming upon us.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, people, maybe it has to do with the media, but people are more open today to a lot of things that, the media labels them paranormal, you know, which is a horrible term.
Oh, it's a terrible
term. But people are more into, so to speak, you know, near-death experiences and apparitions and mediumship and things of that nature. It's becoming a little for to talk about it. But the point is, there are still many, many people that keep such experiences inside. Now, you were telling me today you did a walkthrough at the hotel. Yeah.
We've been getting ready for our own event in November on Friday night, 11-11-11. We're going to have our night of mediums, and then the next morning we're having our annual conference on November 12th at the Sheraton in Hapag. So, of course, when you're having events like this, you have to go through as you get closer and do a walkthrough of the hotel just to make sure everything's going to go smoothly, that the room's going to be set up the right way, the final choices for the menus, for the food, for all that kind of stuff.
All right, we're going to go to a break. So stay with us, and we'll be back in about 3 minutes. Thanks.
The Forever Family Foundation will be hosting its much-sought-after annual fundraising event, Night of Mediums, on 11-11-11 at the Sheraton Long Island Hotel in New York at 7 p.m. Enjoy a scrumptious dinner while seated at a table of only 12 people as a Foundation-certified medium joins you following dessert to conduct spirit communication for your table only. It's a terrific opportunity to not only get readings in an intimate setting, but to enjoy a good meal and help the Foundation at the same time. For reservations and information, call 631-425-7707. Again, that's 631-425-7707. Or visit www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you could find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
If you grieve the loss of a loved one, a Forever Photo may truly help to bring you solace. With a Forever Photo, renowned graphic artist Andre Balog will create a personalized rendering of your dear one in spirit, thereby turning it into a constant source of comfort to you. All you need to do is send a high-quality photo, and Andre will do the rest. To get further information and see examples of these beautiful artworks, email Andre at andresphoto.com or call him 323-667-0309. That's E-N-D-R-E at E-N-D-R-E-S-P-H-O-T-O-S.com.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
For those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Eben Alexander III. Our sponsor is Forever Photos by Andre Ballo and can be found on the web at andresphotos.com. That's Andres, E-N-D-R-E-S, photos.com. Bob?
And Dr. Eben Alexander obtained his medical degree from Duke University and has spent 25 years in academic neurosurgery, including 15 years on the faculty of Harvard Medical School. He has authored or co-authored over 150 chapters and papers in peer-reviewed journals and was instrumental in the development of stereotactic radiosurgery. As he has been presenting at about 200 meetings and conferences around the world, he was totally immersed in and devoted to the science. He also has a position at the University of Virginia Medical School as assistant professor. Now, Dr. Alexander's career and life took a major turn in 2008 when science and spirituality suddenly took on new meaning. Welcome, Dr. Alexander.
Well, thank you. It's a real pleasure to be here.
And, you know, I'd like to start off before we get into your actual experience. I mean, let's roll back the clock a little bit. Let's say 5-6 years ago, I was one of your patients, and I had a brain tumor, and you were treating me, and I wasn't doing so well, and I went into coma, and was able to get resuscitated and come out of the coma, and I started talking to you about, about the places that I've been, another dimension that I had visited. So, what would your reaction have been to my telling you this, both you know, from a scientist perspective and as a person?
I think certainly as a neurosurgeon before my coma, I would have been very sympathetic and confirmed how terribly sick you'd been and how we in neuroscience understand that a lot of the things described by people who have these near-death encounters, we had fairly simple explanations for the various symptoms and reports that people would give after near-death experiences. But I would have basically tried to tell you just to, you know, get over it because that's the way that the very sick or dying brain behaves.
Right, and that's what you learned as you went through medical school, and consciousness was a byproduct of the brain. So how would you think otherwise, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was I was someone who wanted to believe in an afterlife, but my scientific self said, no, we really don't have any explanation for that at all. And we had some simple explanations that seemed to suffice. So, I've learned a tremendous amount since I went through my coma experience.
Yeah. Well,
really changed my mind about all of that.
I would imagine so. And you were stricken very suddenly. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about the your saga and how you succumbed to illness and what happened?
Yeah, I was actually very healthy when I went to bed the night before everything happened. Got up at 4:30 in the morning. This was November 10th of 2008. I was got up to get ready for work and suddenly had very severe back pain. Worst I'd ever felt, and really within minutes was pretty much immobile and lying down, and my wife Holly was massaging my back trying to make me better, and my son came in to try and make me feel better, and literally within about an hour and a half I was too far gone to know what was going on, and then went straight into a grand mal seizure and a coma. Very sudden.
Yeah.
Very severe. No choice. This is really extreme. Very deadly. Acute bacterial meningitis. And I spent the next week in a coma. I was on a ventilator the whole time, on triple antibiotics. I don't remember a single thing from this world. After my wife and son were massaging me, trying to make me feel better on that bed. And she just called 911 and had me hauled off to the ER, and they realized how sick I was. They did a lumbar puncture and quickly found out I had acute bacterial meningitis. And it turns out it was a very, very rare form. It was E. coli. And spontaneous E. coli meningitis in adults really doesn't happen. We never found a direct cause for why I should get that. So it was probably less than 1 in 10 million annual incidents to be expected to have that diagnosis.
Well, and 1 in 10 million, and then I know that I also read that, you know, the fatality rate in such cases was over 90%. And as you point out, you know, survivors were almost always kind of doomed to be in a vegetative state. So when you reflect upon that, I mean, here you are, you're perfectly healthy, you get stricken, chances are less than 1 in 10 million, and you make a complete recovery. I mean, as you look back, do you think that your recovery and your experience might have been part of a plan?
Well, I think I can tell you one thing. You know, they in one of those early lumbar punctures, they measured the CSF glucose, the glucose level in the fluid around my brain. And in a normal person, that's going to be about 60 to 80. In somebody with a very severe bacterial meningitis, it may go down to 20 or even a little lower. And in my case, it went all the way down to 1. And I think that is there to help keep me focused. I think the fact that I had a very rare diagnosis to start with, and also having, as you mentioned, a very severe sudden onset, going into coma, you know, within an hour or two, that in and of itself, by the time I got to the ER, mortality rate, given that severe, very sudden drop into coma, is over 90%. And then spending basically 7 days unresponsive to triple antibiotics and in a coma, my physicians were really ready to give up. And I'd say chances of survival at that point are extremely low. But even if you're, you know, one of those 2 to 4% of survivors, nobody would expect you to have a full recovery. And I was blessed with a complete recovery within 2 or 3 months, I'd say. So I think I can tell you that what it does is it has kept me very focused on making sense of what happened to me in coma.
Mm. Now, as we get into the experience that you had, I mean, were there a lot of things? I know, obviously, now you've probably read a great deal on the current research and some of the past research and what people that have near-death experiences report. Did yours have some of the common elements to what you're now reading?
Yeah, I'd say mine was very similar to a lot of the deep transcendental near-death experiences. And, you know, before I had really not read that literature, so I didn't know much about it at all. And in fact, as I started to recover, I was just so elated at what I'd been through. I mean, it was a spectacular experience deep in coma. My son, Evan IV, was majoring in neuroscience, and I told him I wanted to write all this up, and I was clearly still somewhat affected by the whole thing. And he gave me two great pieces of advice. One was, do not talk to people who were there until you've written down everything you can remember. And the second was, do not read anything at all about near-death experiences or physics or cosmology until you've written down everything you can remember. So I spent the next 2 months not reading anything and just writing down everything. I think it turned into almost 100 pages typed into my computer over 2 months, of everything I could remember about the entire experience. And then I started doing the reading. And you know, I was just amazed and kind of awestruck with my experience, just as many people are. But, of course, initially talking about it to physicians and everything, the general feeling was, yeah, but you were extremely sick. And, you know, we know the brain does very strange things when it's that sick. And to me, the most amazing thing was how totally hyper-real that realm was. And there were incredible things that happened to me there, very real, very rich, vivid, interactive experience. In fact, my brain right now, and I think I've made a full recovery and I'm very healthy, I think my brain would have a lot of trouble mustering such an incredibly hyper-real, hyper intense and interactive experience even now. So there's something very unusual that goes on when you get that close to death. And that is what has absolutely driven me to try and understand this a lot better.
Yeah, and of course, many of your colleagues still today would point to the fact that, you know, these were hallucinations, you know, from a dying brain. But yet, it doesn't really jive, you know, when you consider that your experience and the experiences of many others, as you just pointed out, are very clear, very lucid, very, you know, well-organized. And that's the last thing you'd expect from somebody having a hallucination.
Right. Yeah, I went through probably seven different hypotheses that I've discussed with other neurosurgeons, neurologists, neuroscientists, trying to make sense of this. And really, none of those hypotheses can explain it. And I focused especially on kind of the hyper reality, which is something I was really surprised when I started reading the near-death experience literature, how commonly people describe that. And it was really striking. And the very fact that you can have encounters with other spirits and in fact with deities, and that the messages and lessons from those other entities can come into your mind instantly and completely, really kind of bypasses a lot of what we think about as how the brain works. Mm. And that was very, very difficult to explain with any of the models that I had. And that led to kind of even deeper research to try and get to the bottom of it.
Yeah, and of course, with your training, I mean, you were in a unique position as you were systematically ruling out each medical explanation, which you knew very well. So you were and remain in a very unique position and having a different perspective than most experiencers. When we talk about some of the things you did experience, I mean, did you experience this all-encompassing light that seemed to be a loving type of a light that many people talk about?
Yeah, I can tell you about my experience, and I don't know how much of our time we should put into it, but briefly, and then you can question me about any parts where you have questions.
Okay.
But for a long time, and again, one thing to understand is the first thing I remember deep in coma, all of my life memories from before were gone. I had no words, no language. Everything was gone. I had absolutely no knowledge of my family or loved ones. I had zero about anything about humans or Earth or the universe. Everything was gone. And I was just a piece of awareness. It was kind of a coarse, murky, underground, a very monotonous, dull, droning existence. And given that it really was my first instant and I had no memories of a life, it seemed that I was there an extremely long, long, long time. It's hard to put into words, but very monotonous. Like I said, I could wonder in my mind, I could have kind of a question. I had no words, but just kind of a wonder about where in the world I was and what this was all about, and nothing ever came to answer me. And then somewhere after a very long time of that place, there was a melody, a spinning, bright melody that just came right in front of me, this beautiful light and spinning, and it expanded, and it was just like morning sun on the mist in a valley, and it just all of a sudden cleared everything out, had this beautiful, verdant valley, and I never had any body image whatsoever during the entire experience. I was a speck on this butterfly wing, beautiful butterfly, looping and swirling through all these budding flowers and blossoming buds on trees and swooping with all these millions of other colorful butterflies. It was a very fantastic and beautiful scene, colors indescribable. And I remember what I called, when I wrote all this up, villagers dancing below us, lots of joy and merriment, waterfalls, sparkling pools of water, and above these brilliant, bright clouds. And these arcs of gold and silver light and these anthems coming down from them. And in writing about it, I called those moving arcs of light and the absolutely gorgeous hymns angelic choirs. I mean, that was what came to mind. And all the visions and auditory were completely mixed up in my memories. It was very unusual trying to recall this. It clearly got in there in some strange way. And then a sense of this divine wind blowing through everything. And that was, again, no words at all when I was there, but in trying to put it to words afterwards, that was this awesome awareness of the divine nature behind it and the total unconditional love. A beautiful girl, a companion on the butterfly wing with me, never said a word, but her thoughts went straight into my mind, reassuring, comforting, love, unconditional love. Never would I be thrown away. This incredible, indescribable love. And then outside of this entire universe, and that's where I was with this divinity and with this orb of brilliant light, and they were telling me at the very beginning that I'd be going back. I didn't know what that meant. And, of course, important to point out that at that point I was far, far beyond being the consciousness of any one person. This was an awareness that I think we all share at that very, very deepest level outside of this physical existence, of being this consciousness that is really very close to that creative, loving source at the very core of it all. And it's just an absolutely marvelously beautiful thing that you really just cannot put into words. I mean, words are just such a weak and pale version of what it's really like. And then I would drift back from that beautiful place where I was taught these lessons, and the lessons would flow in instantly into my awareness from that creative source, that divine love, and the orb of light. And they would teach me lessons about the makeup of the universe, and then I would drift back into that, what I call the earthworm eye view, that very coarse, early, underground, monotonous existence. And what I learned is that by remembering the notes and the appearance of that spinning melody of light, I could bring it back, and it would spin, and it would clear everything away, and I'd be back on the butterfly wing with my beautiful companion, who would again, give me those beautiful, loving thoughts of reassurance and comfort, and then out of the universe again with that divine creative source and the orb of light. And they would always remind me, you will be going back. You'll be going back. And I just didn't know what that meant. I guess I assumed that floating back into that coarse underground realm was what they meant. But then I realized, again, it's hard to say, but I think three or four times that I went back in there using the melody, but then the melody was no longer working. And then I was on my way back to this realm, and of course I didn't know what this realm was all about. And I had a beautiful experience where I was buoyed up on prayers of people around me, but I couldn't understand any of the words. I didn't know what was going on, but that was part of the process of coming back to this realm, where just this very strong vision of people in arcs around me and all kneeling and in prayer. And I would never say that the prayers brought me back, because I think there are much bigger purposes behind our course in that realm. And certainly as a neurosurgeon, I can tell you plenty of times when I had patients, families praying for them, and, you know, just wonderful people, and for whatever reason, that patient did not come back. So I would, as much as I can tell you, the prayers were very comforting and gave me just a wonderful, loving kind of welcome when I found I could not get back into that spiritual realm. I wouldn't want anyone to think that, you know, it was just praying hard enough that brought me back. I think there must have been other things going on that had to do with my return.
Mm. And it sounds, well, it's an incredible experience, and one thing that rings true is that it's safe to say that you had absolutely no fear during this.
I really did not. It was, I mean, I must confess that, part of that, especially when I was down in that kind of earthworm eye view down in the murky depths, is that I thought that however this turned out, it could either keep going or not, and that it really didn't matter. And then, of course, after I'd been out into that spiritual realm with that beautiful, loving, creative source and that unconditional love, and my, you know, my angel, I came to call her my guardian angel on the butterfly wing. After that point, I had such total faith in that entity. They kept telling me I'd be coming back. And, you know, really by the time I could no longer get access there through the spinning melody, I had great confidence that they would take care of me. You know, whatever, wherever I was headed, I knew I would be taken care of. And so there was really no fear in any part of that.
Well, just I don't know where to begin. There's so many things to talk about, but unfortunately we have to take a break. So when we come back, we're going to hear more from Dr. Eben Alexander about his experience of this unseen world. And so stay tuned, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
Is there chocolate in the afterlife? Don't miss the 5th Annual Forever Family Foundations Conference on Saturday, November 12th at the Sheraton Long Island Hotel in New York. This all-day conference features presentations by medical doctor Lee Bounum, offering scientific evidence of an afterlife, and paranormal evidence by noted parapsychologist Lloyd Auerbach. A full sit-down luncheon will be highlighted by a formal chocolate tasting, and guests will be treated to two sessions of spirit communication conducted by certified mediums Angelina Diana and Teresa Caputo. Call 631-425-7707. Again, that's 631-425-7707, or visit www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present, available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's Hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
If you grieve the loss of a loved one, a forever photo may truly help to bring you solace. With a forever photo, renowned graphic artist Andre Balog will create a personalized rendering of your dear one in spirit, thereby turning it into a constant source of comfort to you. All you need to do is send a high-quality photo, and Andre will do the rest. To get further information and see examples of these beautiful artworks, email Andre at andresphoto.com or call him 323-667-0309. That's E-N-D-R-E at E-N-D-R-E-S-P-H-O-T-O-S.com.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you could find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you're just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Evan Alexander III. This show is sponsored by Forever Photos by Andre Ballo and can be found on the web at andresphotos.com. That's Andre, E-N-D-R-E-S, photos.com. If you're a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Before we get back to our show, we have a few important foundation updates for our listeners. Some of our supporters write to say they love the radio show. They want to see it continue. They love the work of Forever Family Foundation, but they just don't have extra dollars these days to send our way. Even though we are a 100% volunteer, not-for-profit organization, it still takes a lot of money to do the work we do. And yet, we want to do so much more. So this is how everyone can help without sending us money. Go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that is taken out. And each time that card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. But you don't have to stop there. If your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com, but first use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website, and again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. For each search, we will receive a donation. And when you find your items, a portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. Our Holidays Past raffle is in full swing. At this point, we only have 65 tickets sold because of the problem we've been having with PayPal. So our loss is your gain. You would be foolish not to enter this raffle right now. It's $5 a chance, 5 chances for $20. There are more options. Please visit our website at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org for more information on entering the raffle, or you can simply mail in your check to Forever Family Foundation, 222 Atlantic Avenue, Oceanside, New York, 11572. Our annual conference, Is There Chocolate in the Afterlife?, with feature Friday night fundraiser, Night of Mediums, is set for November 11th. 2011 at the Sheraton Long Island Hotel in Hophog, New York. We have early bird pricing that has been extended to September 15th due to Hurricane Eileen knocking us out of the Internet for more than a week. And we still have special group rate hotel rooms that will continue through part of October. This is a limited seating conference and fundraiser, so book early to avoid disappointment. Our Holidays Past event, an evening of spirit spirit communication conducted by Forever Family Foundation certified mediums, is in three locations so far. December 3rd, Joanne Gerber will be in Bethel, Connecticut. December 10th, Angelina Diana will be in Natick, Massachusetts with afterlife advocate Dave Kane. And December 17th, Teresa Caputo will be in Melville, New York. It's $25 a seat for members, $35 for non-members. Reserve now. Seats fill quickly. Back to you, Bob.
And we're back with Dr. Alexander. Thanks for staying with us. The one thing, when I was reading some of your writing, Dr. Alexander, you write that near-death experience accounts of a spiritual realm are more real, you know, than our physical reality. And that struck a chord with me, because having read a great number of these historical channeled accounts, people in the afterlife often describe our physical world as the dream world, and their dimension as the true reality. So is that sort of consistent with your experience?
Yes, it's very much consistent. In fact, that was one of the features that was just so shocking, and it you know, when I started reading that that was commonly described by others, that was something that really helped me to get on board with how important all this was, because it was, in essence, it initially, when I was coming out of coma and in those first many days as I was kind of realizing just how sick I'd been and kind of reeling from the incredible nature of the experience, I remember thinking that inside coma, that very rich spiritual experience was too real to be real. And that was kind of the phrase I used in some of my early writings. It was so shockingly real. Huh. And especially when early on I was, and, you know, as I said, I had talked with my some of my physicians and some others, and everybody was, oh, yes, you were extremely sick. You almost died. Your CSF glucose was down to 1, you know, in coma for 7 days with acute bacterial meningitis. And I was just thinking, well, my gosh, I must have been incredibly sick. It was still striking how real it was. And, in fact, some of the models, physiologic models I looked at initially addressed exactly that hyperreality. Like, how in the world might one explain that from a neurophysiologic and neuroanatomic standpoint? A big part of my condition was that I had meningitis, which, although it's usually very deadly if you have bacterial meningitis and are in coma for a week, doesn't leave much of your human brain to recover. It actually makes it easier to sort through some of the hypotheses if you do survive it, because it is so effective at wiping out the human part of the brain, that whole outer surface. And in fact, that was very helpful at going through some of the hypotheses and for the most part ruling them out. But I was very specifically looking for anything that might explain that hyperreality, because it was so striking.
Yeah, and as you know, most of the research that's conducted today involves, when it comes to near-death experience, involves patients that go into cardiac arrest, because that's what happens most frequently, and it's very difficult to study patients otherwise. But, I mean, you mentioned that from a medical standpoint, that the value of the near-death experience depends upon what's happening in the brain, not necessarily what's happening in the heart. So, your case then would be, as you mentioned, extremely significant, because the neocortex was inactivated by the meningitis, so you can't. It sort of rules out a great many hypotheses, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I think that all near-death experiences, and that includes people who don't have a medical condition per se, but say they're in an almost plane crash or an almost car crash. Many of those people go on to have a remarkable, amazing, kind of mystical journey. And I think all of those are very important, and I don't want to be comparing, the value. But what I did find is that some people early on would ask me, well, did you die? And what they meant was, did your heart stop? And, a lot of the near-death experience literature, of course, has people who have had cardiac arrest. They had no blood flow to their brain for a few minutes, maybe for a long period. And I think those are very valuable experiences. But it's important for people to understand that with meningitis, you do have a very selective, effective way at attacking the human brain, that whole outer surface. And to have that going on for a week is really a very good model for looking at the question where a human being dies. Mm-hmm. I think from that standpoint, it's very important to understand that my experience is also quite...
I guess we're having technical difficulties, and we're trying to get Dr. Alexander back on the line. Now, what's interesting is that what you don't know is that he's taken a little bit of a sabbatical from his duties as a neurosurgeon, and he's writing a book full time. Matter of fact, it hasn't been titled yet. I know he's very close to finishing it. There is a website that people can find out more information, and that is lifebeyonddeath.net, just the way it sounds, www. lifebeyonddeath.net, and you can read about his experience, about his background, a little bit about the plan book, and we will keep you posted on that book's progress, because I'm really looking forward to it.
It's going to be an exciting book.
Yeah.
It really is going to be groundbreaking.
You know, if you noticed speaking with Dr. Alexander, he describes, the senses sort of being all merged together. You know, we've had some guests recently on talking about synesthesia,
right.
With weapons while they're, while you're alive, seeing colors and hearing colors and things of that nature. So maybe that's there's a correlation, because now the near-death experiences are talking about the same thing. The other thing seems to be when we talk about no time and space. I believe Dr. Alexander said that, it seemed like he was there for a very, very, very long time.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's the way it would seem when there's no time.
Yeah.
It just is.
Yeah.
And, of course, that would seem like forever.
Right.
But
and in our physical time, that could have been minutes, or less.
And it probably was.
Yeah.
But, We'll never know. He'll never know. It's a quite an interesting experience, but it seems to be that all of these experiences, his and
hello,
when
hello,
Dr. Alexander.
Yes, sorry, I got the call got dropped, but I am back.
Okay,
we are
good.
Glad you are back.
Glad to be back.
Well,
I don't know how much you heard of what I was saying, but.
Well, I was just playing Dr. Alexander, and I was finishing your sentence. So.
Good. Okay. Well, that's great.
No, please continue. So, where do we leave off? I mentioned. I think I don't know if you heard me, but I mentioned that there are many near-death experiencers that are very reluctant to talk about their experiences to others. They feel perhaps somehow. Afraid of being judged or embarrassed or something, but you're raring to go and to share with people the remarkable experiences that you've had.
Well, I think that's absolutely true. I mean, there was certainly a period when I was trying to figure all this out, and I would talk to people because I really wanted to understand it. And I will say that, for a few months, I thought that I could probably write the whole thing up as a neuroscientific account of what it's like in coma. But the more research I did on my situation, my meningitis, how sick I was, and the more I started to see the resemblance of my experience to others, the more I really started to see how there was a tremendous amount of kind of a realistic aspect of what this was telling me about consciousness. And about really about our existence outside of the physical realm that was undeniable. And in fact, especially as I started looking more into the current state of quantum mechanics, quantum gravity, physics and cosmology, and really came up to speed with the various ideas that are out there about our scientific understanding of the nature of being, and especially about consciousness, because that is really the deep, incredible secret about all this, is the true nature of consciousness. Mm-hmm. And for people who think that a reductive materialist scientific view of the neurons in the brain and the electrons and protons and quarks and photons, and that with those reduced particles in a complex structure, that we can explain the emergence of consciousness, what I can tell you is that that is not true, and that, in fact, it's a far more profound reality than that.
Mm. So, in your opinion, I guess, the experiments that are done by today's physicists and neuroscientists in an attempt to learn the nature of reality or the nature of consciousness may not bear fruit, it's something deeper.
I wouldn't say that. I think they will bear wonderful fruit. I firmly believe that science and spirituality will move forward and will enhance each other, but it really will demand that people on all sides let go of some of their addiction to various dogmatic teachings that they've embraced. And I think we all need to move forward with a much more open mind about what's really here. And I think to the kind of hardcore reductive materialist scientists out there listening, all I would say is if you can get a much better handle on the deep mystery of consciousness and what it's really telling us, I think that would help open your mind to see the real possibilities here, because they are absolutely astonishing. And it all turns on getting a much better idea of what consciousness really involves.
So as somebody that has had unique experience of flying around the universe as a speck on a butterfly, or being absorbed into the melody of light, how do you integrate that when you come back into your physical reality? I mean, do your views change? Do your goals and aspirations change?
I would say basically everything changes. Everything changes. And again, one of the most important features of what I saw was how that unconditional and indescribable love at the very core of it all, and into the love that comes from that creative source. And that is really the power and the energy behind everything. It's behind our consciousness, and it's behind how our consciousness manifests in reality. And it really shows me so much about what our souls are really here to do in our brief time on Earth. But I know that our souls actually have an existence that is far more profound on that other side. So it's just very reassuring to know that there really is a tremendous meaning to what we're doing, even here on Earth in our very brief little spell of incarnation. There is a tremendous amount of meaning that has to do with that unconditional love at the core of the entire universe, and that is just a wonderful thing to start to appreciate. And I think other people have gotten there through various techniques, but all I want to do is help people get into exploring consciousness, going deep into consciousness to get to some of these answers, because in reality, we all have to go there on our own. People can write and teach and tell this kind of a story, but at the end of the day, what it really involves is that we each individually go there on our own. And I'm not saying you have to die to do it. I think meditation, centered prayer, what I call the gift of desperation, I think there are many ways that humans have gotten to see the same thing that I saw. And in fact, my biggest strength in pursuing what I saw is when I came to realize how commonly thousands, tens of thousands of people have seen the very same things through different means. And it's a very fundamental part of our existence, of our consciousness.
Yeah, we talk about that often. You're so right that personal experiences are infinitely more important than research and reading and listening. Things take on a whole different perspective when you've experienced it as opposed to read about it. And there are, as you point out, so many different ways of tapping in. But what I wanted to ask you is that when you were obviously had these fundamental truths, you know, communicated to you, I know it's hard to put into words, but they were communicated in a telepathic sense, or just imparted to you in a way that had nothing to do with physical senses?
Yeah, they certainly had nothing to do with physical senses, and that, in fact, was very mysterious at first. As I said, that kind of gateway on the butterfly wing with the beautiful girl, I mean, I think that was just kind of a personalized gateway. I think all of us may have very different gateways going in that kind of welcome us into that realm. And even that, though, was so confusing at first, because everything that normally I would see as beautiful colors or sounds or whatever was all intermixed. totally intermixed, and that part was strange. But then the lessons that would come in, and even the thoughts from my angel on the butterfly wing, were instantaneous and complete. It's hard to describe. They weren't at all limited by language, and they were not linear. They were complete conceptual frameworks that would just come right into my mind, totally clear. And that's part of why it's so incredibly difficult to bring some of that stuff back into this realm.
Yeah,
it's just a lot of it is just indescribable, and in fact, limited here by my human brain and human mind, it's very difficult to even envision some of the things that were shown to me out there.
Yeah, when I think about it, I think that instead of being an observer of the universe, which we are normally, you became part of the fabric of the universe, and that. Certainly is a whole different way of different realm of experience.
Well, I can say that we all go there. I mean, there, all of us who are conscious, and hopefully that includes certainly everybody listening to this program, we're all there at a deep level. And that's why I say that I think that meditation, I happen to use something called HemiSync from the Monroe Institute, which for me has been an absolute godsend. It's just a fantastic way to get back deep into that consciousness. But, I mean, people have many different techniques of doing it. And as I said earlier, it's not just near-death experiences, but meditation of all sorts or centered prayer. There are many ways to get deep into consciousness and see that there's much more there than what that little linguistic, rational, logical thinking brain says it's there. In fact, a big part of my goal with a meditation is to turn off that little voice of the neurosurgeon of 25 years, and because I know there's some much deeper guides that can take me the places I need to be taken.
Mm. Well, I'm really disappointed that we've reached the end of our allotted time. I surely hope that you'll join us for part two of this, especially after the book comes out. I've been telling our listeners to go on your website, which is lifebeyonddeath.net, and they can learn more about your experience and background, and you'll
exactly.
have updates.
There's a lot. Lifebeyonddeath.net, and right now I'm just way too busy trying to finish the book, but after that I plan to put out a newsletter and to be much more openly communicating with people. But if people email me their address and interest, then I'll be saving all that up and can respond in due course. But right now I've just got to finish the book.
Absolutely. And I wish you well in that pursuit. We anxiously await the book. I'm sure it's going to be wonderful. And thank you so much for joining us, and I hope that you will come back with us again soon.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Bob and Fran. I really appreciate this invitation. I'd be happy to come back anytime.
Thank you.
That would be
thank
wonderful. You. Thank you so much.
Have a good
thank
evening.
You too, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Yes.
Bye now.
Bye. We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy for more participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Vicki Steffi, Judith Lachman, Wendy Lippo, Kathy Ward, Nikki Hargraves, Michael Tim, and anybody affected by any of these world tragedies that are going on. Also, now let's give energy of love and gratitude to the waters and all the living creatures in Mexico Gulf by praying like this: to the waters, whales, dolphins, pelicans, fishes, shellfishes, plankton, coral, algae, and all creatures in our Gulf of Mexico, I apologize. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. That was Masuro Omoto back May 9th, 2010 with the Gulf tragedy. And now it's time to say...
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.